years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
All right, good evening, Sterling, on Sunday with Walter M. Sterling. And all the research shows that there's one thing that we all agree we need. Weather from Dr. Dave.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
He had a lot of meat in his pants. The people of Walmart, later, Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Kids in public that are obnoxious, loud, running around, it's not the kids' fault, it's the parents' fault.
It only takes a little bit of effort, people.
We'll talk about it coming up on Sterling at Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for you on Sterling at Night.
Sometimes it's not the story itself, it's the way it's reported that drives you absolutely insane. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. That's coming up on Florida Stories.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share a few stories of some famous NYPD cheapskates. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Dancer's unique side hustle gets her jailed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Ladies and gentlemen, look at that. It's 8 minutes past the hour. Oh, 9 minutes past the hour. It's radio. And yes, you do a Google search. Look for Google search results and see what most people are searching for at any given time. All the Midnight Misfits, your friends, your so-called friends, what are they all searching for at any given time? If you search Taylor Swift, Jesus, Olympics, weather, weather would win hands down. That's why we do weather twice an hour. And if there's bad weather, we do it more than twice an hour, don't we, Sean? Dr. Dave is an actual meteorologist, not one of these TV boys with the good hair. This is an actual meteorologist who was on TV with, well, now that you mention it, good hair. But he is a meteorologist, a real meteorologist. You find me another show right now that offers this, and I'll give you a MyPillow. I'll get you a MyPillow if you can find another show that has live weather on Sunday night. And if I'm driving the 18-wheeler, especially down to Florida where there's a hurricane coming, I'd want to know the real weather at any given time. I can't believe these idiots. Suppose they gave an Olympics and nobody cared. Here's an Olympics. Nobody cares. It's amazing. And here's what happened that really, really stuns me. And it's when things have just gone too far. You know, in life, when you're on, when you're at the holidays and you're dealing with relatives, and at some point you go, you know, I think things have gone too far. And you find yourself saying that a lot. I think things have gone too far. Olympic game commentator removed from Paris coverage after making sexist remark about Australia's female swimmers. All right, well, what was the sexist remark that he made? This guy is named Bob Ballard, and he made a crack about Australian gymnasts. Now, you and I know the difference between America and Australia, there are no health clubs in Australia. Everybody in Australia is fit all the time. They all look like Elle McPherson, Kylie Minogue for my gay friends. They all look incredible. I've been to Australia twice. I didn't see a health club once. And by the way, it was the best damn trip. it's freaking great. You get a chance to go to Australia, you just go. There were a couple things that I noticed immediately. It's immaculate. It's not cheap. There's no indigenous retailer, no great knick-knack shop, nothing that's specific to Australia. You could stand at a corner in Melbourne or Sydney and look around, and every logo and every retailer is the same as you have right here. That was the big surprise. It's great to go there at Christmas because it's 80 degrees. It's summer. In December, it's summer. I don't know about the drain and the water thing. I looked at it, but I couldn't remember which way ours went down. I looked. I said, let me see which way the water goes down the drain in Australia, because it's supposed to be the reverse of the way it goes down here. But I didn't remember how it goes down here because I'm left-handed. And when you're left-handed, you're saddled with incredible burdens. You don't think so? You, with the right hand, think about a three-ring binder when you're in school and writing in the three-ring binder. No big deal to you, is it? I would have to put my hand over the metal rings and therefore would have to take the piece of paper out, move the notebook to the side, and then write. Oh, you hadn't thought of that. Also, it turns out that lefties have far higher rates of depression than non-lefties. But that's a lot of nonsense. You know, just buck up. Have the ice cream. Stop whining. Do your job. Stop complaining. Sleep more. Fewer donuts. Less TV. The depression will go away. My mother, from New Jersey, and a different century, if she had ever heard about this nonsense about ADHD, attention deficit syndrome, if she had heard about that, she would have said, really? Knock out the junk food and go to bed. In her mind, that would have solved the problem. And you know what? I hate to tell you how many times I think that would solve the problem. There have been a lot of mysterious new diseases, like AFib, a lot of pretend new diseases, since my mother was giving out prescriptions of go to bed, get off the phone, do your homework, finish your dinner. All of those seem to be cure-alls for at least 18 years of my life. And I am so blessed. I'm really healthy today, and I've been healthy all of my life. I've had to have a procedure here and there, but I didn't feel bad. I never had trouble. I'm thinking, why am I so healthy? Besides the fact that Hungarians are notorious for their health. Yeah. It's because my mother was no nonsense, and we went to a world-class pediatrician, Dr. Titchener. And Dr. Titchener did something that was blasphemous today. When I was sick, starting at 8 in the morning, when he had office hours, my mother would start to call the office. And it would be busy, busy, busy. There was no auto dial. It was busy, busy, busy. And then around 8:17, the nurse would answer in the pediatrician's office when I was growing up in North Jersey. And my mother would ask the pediatrician what to do about whatever the ailment was. And sometimes the doctor decided that he was going to come over. Between 8 and 11 in the morning, he made house calls. Every day, he made house calls. And then after 11, you could go to his office. That's how they did it. I don't quite understand the appeal of dragging a sick kid to a doctor's office to sit in the waiting room with other sick kids. What exactly is that supposed to solve? But this Bob Ballard, an Olympic commentator, was removed from the Paris coverage for making a sexist remark. Do you want to hear what he said that got him removed? In just seconds. This is Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Steve Harvey.
Okay, you want truth? This is why men lie. Because we are afraid of your reaction to the truth.
It turns out I didn't like men.
Well, I don't think I like men either.
I mean, I'm a lesbian.
Oh, I mean, I hate people.
Oh, my God. Hello. All right, Sterling, every damn night. Yes, this show's on six nights a week. Did you know that? Did you get in touch with this station and say we'd like to hear Mr. Sterling six nights a week instead of some hack screaming at the Democrats, some hack screaming at the Democrats? The people at WPHT had the common sense, Greg Stockard, David Yadgroff, to say, well, we need Sterling every damn night. We'd rather have bad radio than people screaming at the Democrats. Olympic Games commentator removed from Paris coverage for his sexist remarks about Australian female swimmers. Ladies and gentlemen, if anything is going to bring out sexist remarks in men, it's going to be Australian female swimmers. In fact, that would be a really good, you know, sweatshirt. His name's Bob Ballard. Now, what exactly did Bob say to get him thrown out because he made a sexist remark?
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
Oh. Oh, let me clutch my pearls. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Oh, you didn't quite get what he said? Well, I don't know how anybody would pay any attention
well,
anyway.
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
That's what got him thrown out. That sentence, that statement, in the land of the precious, that got him thrown out. Now think about all of the things you say on any given day. I have three daughters. Any man who has a daughter, any man who has a wife, knows that the amount of time needed to go from A to B for 90% of the women is a great deal longer than for a guy to go from A to B. Have you ever, gentlemen, have you ever just left the house? Have you ever just left the house? Have you ever gotten in the car, started the car? A foot behind you is your daughter, your girlfriend, your mistress, your wife, or all of them at once. And you're walking to the car, you're almost at the car, and you get in, and then you turn around, they've disappeared. They've disappeared, and you see the door swinging in the breeze, and the cat trying to get out, and the dog trying to get out, but they're inside getting something incredibly important that they could not leave behind.
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
He got suspended for telling the truth. That's the worst part. Well, it's a horrible stereotype. It minimizes. Nothing minimizes the Australian women's swimming team. Well, first, gentlemen, I know what all of you are going to do. You're going to dive to Google when you get to the heart drug stop. And when you get to the truck stop, you're going to run to Google and take a look at the Australian swim team, because the very thought of the Australian swimming team accelerates your fantasy life. Bondi Beach, a topless beach. Maybe that's where the Australian swimming team practiced, at Bondi Beach, nude. But you can imagine how gorgeous they are. And they're especially gorgeous because they're gorgeous, but also because they've achieved something. There is nothing sexier than a man or woman who is glowing with achievement. And there they are, the Australian women's swimming team. I'm sure they did spectacularly well. And then Mr. Ballard went, okay, well, we're waiting for them to come out of the locker room. We can't wait to see the Australian women's swimming team. We're going to interview them. They're taking a few minutes because...
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
And he got suspended for that. Let me see the detail of this penalty. Let's see if they've defined how long this is going to go on. He made a sexist remark after securing gold. They won gold. It doesn't matter what he said. They won the gold. Australia's quartet, consisting of these great swimmers, made their way out of the Paris Aquatic Center. At this point, experienced commentator Ballard said what he said. A clip of the comment has since gone viral on social media, and Eurosport has opted to act swiftly. Oh, because this would end the Olympics right there. Not the Last Supper thing. Not the fact that the Seine, there's no way in hell it can be clean enough to swim in. No way. It's gone viral. During a segment of Eurosport's coverage last night, commentator Bob Ballard made an inappropriate comment. Did he say they have huge hooters? Did he say, boy, I liked it when their swimsuit rode up their butt? Did he say any of that? No. He made an inappropriate comment. A commentator has been removed for making a sexist remark about women, swimmers. Eurosport commentator has been removed. To that end, yeah, the article repeats him saying, you know. Oh, Lizzie Simmons, who alongside Ballard on commentary duty, another broadcaster woman sitting next to him, described the comment as outrageous.
Well, the women just finished a gap. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
How is that outrageous? I'm sure it was a fact. Outrageous would have been, I really looked for their swimsuits to ride up their butt when they got out of the swimming pool. I loved it when they pulled the elastic on their swimsuits and made their breasts jiggle when they got out of the swimming pool. Those would have been, like, almost outrageous. But still, nothing to get him fired. He gets pulled off. He gets pulled off of the Paris Eurosport broadcast, sitting next to a woman, commenting on the obvious, which is that women take a little longer to get ready to get out of the locker room.
Well, women just finish up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
Yeah. That's what got him suspended. Now, let me tell you what didn't happen at the Paris Olympics. Something should have happened, and it did not happen. And this is where I scratch that and go, what? I'm Walter Sterling. Good evening. It's 28 past the hour. You and I can talk live. It's a live radio show. There's nothing else live. My phone number is 888-688-WALT. 888-688-WALT. Here's what else was at the Olympics. Stephen Van de Velde. I should be a professional announcer. He should be kicked out of the Olympics. Why? Did he say something like, well, you know, they're going to take a while to get their makeup? No, that got that guy thrown out immediately. The guy who said women like to put on makeup, he got thrown out immediately of the Paris Olympics. But this guy, Stephen Van de Velde, he should be knocked out and sent home from Paris. The sooner the better. What did he do? Well, he's a Dutch beach volleyball player who looks like a Dutch beach volleyball player. Stephen Van de Velde. But he's also a convicted child rapist. 29 years old. He was sentenced to 4 years in prison. He's a Dutch beach volleyball player, Stephen Van de Velde. He's still playing, but he's a convicted child rapist. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by old guys.
The Babylon Bee, in tragic comedic fashion, captured the moment perfectly. Man ruled too senile to stand trial, still fine to run country.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
He had a lot of meat in his pants. The people of Walmart, later. Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Kids in public that are obnoxious, loud, running around. It's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault.
It only takes a little bit of effort, people.
We'll talk about it coming up on Sterling at Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for you on Sterling at Night.
Sometimes it's not the story itself, it's the way it's reported that drives you absolutely insane. for Sterling on Sundays. I'm James Parker. That's coming up on Florida Stories.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share a few stories of some famous NYPD cheapskates. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Dancer's unique side hustle gets her jailed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Every damn night, get us right. It's the Walter Sterling Show. It's the Walter Sterling Show. Every damn night.
Hey, yes, our spy in Hollywood, who knows all the secrets of Hollywood and knows the secrets of which movies are worth the trouble and which movies are not worth the trouble. Mateus, thank you for being on Sterling on Sunday. Now, I know that for many years you were forced against your will to listen to the show and not be part of the show. You listened on KFBK. I hope they got their damn satellite thing fixed and we're on KFBK tonight. A giant number one 12-plus radio station. Can you handle that kind of pressure going from listening to being on it?
I knew 10 years ago, I said, this is the kind of show that I would like to be part of because it's great radio. I sit there no matter where I am, I'll pull over. You know, some people call those driveway moments because I laugh out loud at some of the things you come up with. This is great radio, and I'm honored, sir, to be a part of this program because it's great fun. And it's true. I listened on KFBK for 10 years, and here we are. So thank you for having me.
Well, I'm honored that somebody as erudite as you, who could make me learn the word erudite, is participating in this giant radio show. Movies are very big in the summer. What's the big movie this weekend?
Well, the biggest movie this weekend has to be Deadpool and Wolverine from Marvel Studios, directed by Sean Levy. And it's got some really funny writing from Ryan Reynolds, who stars as Deadpool. And he's been consistently funny in that part since he started doing this comic book character. Hugh Jackman reprises his role as Wolverine. Although he was killed off in an earlier movie, he appears again due to the fact that he is simply plucked from an alternate universe where he was still living. It's a most convenient device used by Marvel to reintroduce their popular characters and make more movies. This is exactly what you'd expect, Walter. And although I find it exceedingly violent and unnecessarily bloody, there are a lot of cameos of past stars from these films. I won't go into them now because leave that as a surprise for the folks that want to see it at their local theater. It's more fun that way. But Emma Corrin is a very shapely lady, although her head is shaved in this, and she's very, very attractive, and I think you'll find her exceedingly lovely. I did, and certainly I don't think I'll be alone with that. She appears as Cassandra Nova. Matthew McFadden's in this, too, as the evil-minded Mr. Paradox. And Jon Favreau, who I've loved since Swingers many years ago, are part of the cast. So it's going to be fun for fans. The jokes are quite funny, but it probably won't be remembered as one of the best examples of the genre. But I'll tell you, at the box office, it has made now $205 million,
Whoa.
Which is amazing in 2 to 3 days, and it exceeded its production cost of $200 million. So they've $500 into the positive. So that's impressive because the last few haven't been doing so well.
Please explain how Ryan Reynolds, one man, has been able to bed Scarlett Johansson and his current wife, who for some reason I can't remember.
Blake Lively
and Scarlett Johansson. Well-endowed, beautiful, successful women who can say things like, well, if he loses his job, it doesn't really matter. That's a perfect girl. That is the dream girl, that if I lose my job, gee, it doesn't matter.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. Of course, you've heard girls say that they like guys that make them laugh, and I'm sure these women probably find him amusing. But I think you had a very interesting theory about that, perhaps, that we should explore further. Maybe they make them laugh, on their yacht or perhaps in their Porsche or some other place. And, you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, they make them laugh in their Porsche. Now, notice that every Playboy Playmate, when they put down the spoon, said, what I want in a man is a great sense of humor. Every one of them said they want a guy with a great sense of humor. And I'm like, I'm sure they were funny guys in their high school. They didn't run off and marry any of those funny guys in high school. It helps if they're a CAA agent and know, like, one joke. All right, Mateus, how do Midnight Misfits get in touch with you, Mateus?
Well, you can find me at mabhollywood.com. That's mabhollywood, like the city, .com. Or on Facebook, it's Mateus Bombals Hollywood, MATIASBOMBAL, and Hollywood, Mateus Bombals Hollywood. And this is your pal, Mateus Bombal, bidding you a very pleasant evening, Walter.
An astonishing recipe from JB Bakery coming up just for you in just seconds. Sterling every damn night. Got it?
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by an angry butcher.
There's over $10 million in beef in here. The best steaks in the country.
All right, 50 minutes past the hour. We go to the Jersey Shore. We go down the shore to JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, with Steve and Selena. They evolve from being work, wife, and husband to being dating. Now they're officially dating and possibly shacking up. And their parents are vaguely accepting. Is this right?
Hey, Walter, good evening.
True.
Selena, is this right? You're like vaguely dating now and your parents vaguely accept this?
Yes, everything is very vague. No, I'm just kidding. It's pretty serious, I guess, at this point. And we've been together for almost a year. It's 11 months, I think, now. And the parents haven't said anything negative yet, so I would assume everyone's on board.
Have they met him?
Of course they've met him, yes.
Now, Selena, I have three daughters, and I know that women in general view time differently than men. Men can date forever. They have no need to buy an engagement ring. They're in no hurry to get engaged. There's no hurry, even in New Jersey, to get married and settle the estate early. No prenups. Men don't think that way. Men think, am I doing good enough for sexo? That's all they think about. Women have plans. Women plan their weddings when they're the age of 8. Is that a fair statement?
I think that would be a fair statement, yes.
Did you start planning your wedding when you were 8?
You know, I never planned out my wedding, like, with 100% of the details. And I planned a lot of different kinds of weddings. I liked thinking about weddings for my Barbie dolls, but I never really planned out my wedding. But I definitely thought about it.
No man plans out his wedding when he's 8. He plans out how to attack the enemy and how to hit the ball better and how to beat up that kid. That's really all guys think about. This planning of the wedding thing, it's exclusively a gift that women have, is planning the wedding. Therefore, there must be an invisible clock in your head, Selena, as to how long you're going to give this guy until he solidifies his plans toward you. I'm not saying he needs to do it or when, but you must have a plan in your head as to how long he's going to get.
So here's the thing. If I confirm that, I'm just giving Steven a favor and just an indication of when that is. So because the clock is invisible, I can't actually say anything about when the clock will run out on that one, because that would just be giving it away, and then there would have been no point in making it invisible in the first place.
A college girl. There's mighty fine thinking. Where would you like to have the reception?
I don't know. I have to think about that one. Again, I can't give away any details because then
right.
I'm just giving him all the answers.
Ultimately, where you have the reception will be up to your mother. Are you aware of that?
Yes. Yes, I am aware of that.
Because you'll have very strong points of view that will be valuable. Stephen will also have strong points of view which will be ignored. And your mother will manage it this way. You'll say, I'd really like to have it here. And she'll say, No. Susan had it there. It was a disaster. And she'll make up reasons why your ideas are bad. She won't say it's a bad idea. She'll just provide mom evidence. Oh, no. A lot of my friends were very disappointed in that place. It'll go like that. And ultimately, you will decide on the one place she thinks is okay.
Walter, can I butt
that
in?
That sounds about right.
I don't know, Stephen. You have no say in this conversation, actually. But yes, please butt in. Go ahead, sir.
She's so smart. She's so intelligent. That's why I love her so much. She has all the best answers for everything. But we were actually, I did drop a hint to her one time because her sister was planning a wedding. And I mentioned, hey, she should, what do you think about Trump International Golf Course? It's beautiful there. I was like, plus I'm in the wedding business, so I have a little bit of interest in how weddings, you know, should look and how they should run and what the cake should look like. So I did drop little hints to her just to see how she was feeling things out. And she actually, I think she's been planning a wedding for a little bit of time, maybe not 8, but maybe 12.
Now, the most important advice I can give you about a wedding, and this is really good advice that no one ever says, ever. One, you must register gifts. Two, wherever you decide to register do your wedding registry, wherever you decide to do that, look at their catalog, look at what they sell, and find the most expensive item. And be sure to put that in your registry. And don't think, oh, my friends could never afford that. Oh, it'd be just rude to ask for something that expensive. No. There will be, I promise you, one person at your wedding who will want to show off and will buy the most expensive thing. And believe it or not, that will get off your registry first. The most expensive thing will go first, it's stunning. It's an amazing phenomenon. And don't do that thing where you've got some poor friends and we need to register salt and pepper shakers for $8. No. Only register things that you would never buy yourself because of either the price or the luxury of it. Do not give your friends with the salt and pepper shaker an out. If they want to give you a salt and pepper shaker, they'll find a place to give it to you.
What would be a good wedding gift?
The most expensive one you can find, like a leather chair, a leather recliner from Restoration Hardware, anything at Tiffany Silver, any Tiffany glassware. That's what you got to go for.
I like that.
Sounds about right to me.
Right? I mean, you got that. Now, tell me, what recipe do you have for Midnight Misfits this week? I sneak peeked it, and it looks incredible. And if you like the recipe that Steve and Selena are about to give us, I will send it to you. But please go ahead. What is it?
The Burlington Blackout Cake, based on all the blackout cyber attacks that have been going on. So it inspired me to make a Burlington Blackout Cake. Basically, it's a blackout cake. Brooklyn had one that they're really known for, but I've always wanted to put one together, and this was a perfect opportunity. It's chocolate mousse and chocolate fudge. That's two of our best sellers, chocolate mousse and chocolate fudge. I said, why not smash them together and make a really decadent, nice piece of cake that's rich and also decadent. So
that
it's
sounds,
two of Selena's favorite things, too.
That sounds spectacular. And I'll tell you in just seconds how to get that recipe with stunning photos, and everything they make is fantastic. Sterling, every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Suppose they gave an Olympics and nobody cared. Dr. Dave, weather.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
He had a lot of meat in his pants. The people of Walmart, later. Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Kids in public that are obnoxious, loud, running around, it's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault.
It only takes a little bit of effort, people.
We'll talk about it coming up on Sterling at Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for you on Sterling at Night.
Sometimes it's not the story itself, it's the way it's reported that drives you absolutely insane. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. That's coming up on Florida Stories.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share a few stories of some famous NYPD cheapskates. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Dancer's unique side hustle gets her jailed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
I want to talk to you. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. I do this show to give you and me a place, because we don't have a place. We don't fit in. We are misfits, loners, introverts. There's nothing in our culture of work or sports where we're welcome or embraced or left-handed or flat-footed. We are not embraced by others. Others don't know what to do about us. Whenever I go to a gathering of people who are normal, I'm always put into this problem. The problem is that the guys never talk about anything I care about. The guys talk about sports and stock market and the government, maybe. Mostly sports and the stock market. I don't care. To me, the stock market is legalized gambling. Good for you, not for me. I wish you well. I don't know. Here's what I know about sports. I was on the original Ultimate Frisbee team. I helped invent Ultimate Frisbee. when I bring that up, real men sort of look around and say, oh, is that Frank over there? I got to tell Frank something. Oh, there's Morton. I haven't seen Morton in a while. Let me catch up with Morton. The minute I say Ultimate Frisbee, it's like, let me catch up with Morton. And then the other sports I know something about is I know how to play bowling. I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know anybody who's in a league. I don't know anybody who's a professional bowler. I don't follow it. I understand how baseball is played. And I know that the Phillies did lousy today, and the Guardians did great. That's it. And I believe that Terry Francona, who was the manager of the Guardians and the Boston Red Sox, does the best press conferences I've ever seen for anybody in any industry. He was great at it. Every word he said, you believed. He was terrific. Okay, now he's retired. Then, what else do I know about sports? I have a crush on Kate Martin of the WNBA, of the Las Vegas Aces, or whatever they call it. I understand basketball now that I've found the WNBA. Yeah, I know, 50 years too late. But now that I see it played by women, I can follow it. I realize later in life that I don't have the sports chip. I can watch football forever, NFL, I'll never understand it. I will just be endlessly confused watching NFL football. Don't understand it. NBA basketball, don't understand it. I can't follow it. I can't determine one play from another. But on the WNBA, they play slower, and I get it. I can enjoy that. Plus, they have personality. They're not just all a bunch of thugs. They're not just all out to steal my hubcaps. Kate Martin, really interesting person and an interesting player. And Caitlin Clark, an interesting player. That I get. That's it. How'd we do? 2.5 minutes maybe. 3 hours more to go at the party. I have nothing to talk to them about. And unlike women, I think it's fair to say, guys don't have an interest in discussing parenting with each other. I would discuss parenting with you all day and night. But other guys, they have no interest in discussing parenting. But I've noticed that on the playgrounds of America, that dads give their kids undivided attention. Undivided attention. They never look at their phone. They never talk to each other. They're staring at those kids. The a-hole fathers are the ones that get on the playground equipment with their child, even though everywhere it says no one over the age of 12 on this equipment. Don't get on this. Don't even think of getting it. You look like an a-hole. Don't get on the equipment with the kid. Don't be a jerk. Meanwhile, over there, way in the far corner, away from all the activity with the kids, there are 8 moms on their phones, yapping it up with each other, paying no attention to their kids. It's an entirely different culture for dads and women, otherwise known as moms. That's what I've noticed. Then this week, I started watching this Sofia Vergara, whatever her name is, from Modern Family. She is finally playing a part that taps into her culture and her roots. She's playing a massive cocaine dealer in South Florida. And it turns out she's playing a real character, the first woman cocaine dealer who had them all scared, owned Miami, controlled it. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, it reminded me of the time when I was living in South Florida and the times I did business in Miami in the 80s. And there was one scene where I went, whoa. There was one scene of this. It's called Geraldo or Geralda. I don't know. But it's new on Netflix. It just started this weekend. And it's about the woman cocaine dealer kingpin that Pablo Escobar was afraid of. He was afraid of this woman. She checks in 20 beautiful women into a sleazy motel to be used as a whorehouse and also as a way to distribute cocaine. The hookers distributed the cocaine. They sold the cocaine to their johns. That's how most of it was done. But this particular hotel in Miami had a swimming pool in the courtyard, as they all do. And it was empty. And I'm like, yes, I know about those hotels. Details in seconds. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Inspired by tips for dating.
Never show a girl that you love her too much. Always act busy and always ignore her messages until another man pops up and shows her how to treat a girl. And now you will receive the wedding invitation. Good luck.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
This is out of Florida. They found a box in a weather balloon, and the confounding part is they pretend to not know what's in it. All right, so here.
The weather balloon was first spotted over the ocean far from the shoreline.
It didn't take very long before it actually came ashore, and it was attached to something small that looked like a styrofoam cooler.
The witness also told News for Jax that the balloon and its attachment caught the attention of a group of surfers who followed the balloon to this sand dune.
The surfers all gathered around and was going to open it, and this guy came kind of running down the beach and was like, get away, get away.
The man the witness was describing is believed to be the person who called 911 to report a suspicious box attached to a weather balloon that had just landed on the beach. Based on this picture of the box, it does not appear to have any label identifying it as a meteorology instrument or device used to study weather.
It had like a little orangey-yellow flag on it, and then it was strapped. I think it was like a little black strap that looked like it was around, a styrofoam cooler.
So far, no one has come forward and said they owned the balloon, and it's still unclear as to where the balloon was launched from.
Now, are you thinking what I'm sure you're thinking what I'm thinking. We know what was in there. It's Florida. What, people trying to sneak stuff into Florida, what is it usually? It's probably drugs, isn't it? Ollie G, do you have any guesses on what could be in the box?
We all know that it's called the bionic, the bomb, the puff, the blow, the black, the herb, the sensi, the chronic, the sweet Mary Jane, ganja, spliff, reefer, the bad, the Buddha, the homegrown, the ill, the Maui Maui, the method, pot, lethal, turbo, tie, shake, skunk, stress, wacky, weed, blaze, the boot, dime bag, Scooby-Doo, Bob, bogey, backyard boogie. But what is the other terms for it?
Exactly. Do you not want to say drugs on TV, news anchor? You're in Florida, and you do the news in Florida. Half of your show is drug-related every day. Well, you can't even throw that in the speculation. I don't know what it could be. It could be a transmitter. Could be a weather sensors. It could be drugs. Like, no one's tried to sneak cocaine into Florida before. Like, we haven't seen miniseries about the cocaine cowboys and narcos and all these other shows, Scarface, about them sneaking. You don't think someone's trying to sneak something into Florida from the ocean? I'm talking to you, person listening. What do you automatically assume it is? Drugs, right? Drugs. All right. So, all right, Parker, you're blowing it out of proportion. They just did like a little 2-minute news report. They can't squeeze in all the speculation. Oh, no. Oh, no. After I already had this thought, they go away from the package, and then they have like a little discussion at the tables with like the meteorologist guy, and jeepers, guys, what could it be? So they talk for another, what is this, minute and 20 seconds? Nobody brings up drugs. And this is in Florida. This isn't like the local convent. This is Florida. They're probably stepping over drugs every time they go to the vending machine.
Wow. Well, Mark's here now. Mark, you know about weather balloons.
Yeah.
Could this have been, I don't know, something different? Or where did it come from?
Drugs. It's identical to a weather balloon. The mystery is that there's no weather NOAA markings on there. Usually the weather balloons are about 5 feet in diameter, similar to that, 75 long string.
No one cares about the balloon, dude. It's the box. What's in the box? And it really was just like this crappy igloo cooler that looked like someone duct taped it up. And they're like, there's a wire with an orange flag. Yeah, it's like one of those little things that they put when they're marking the gas lines in your yard. And probably so if it lands in the ocean or lands in tall grass, it'll be more easily seen by whoever's job it is to come pick up their drugs.
There were two weather balloons launched today down at Cape Kennedy, in Cape Canaveral, and they were launched at 6 a.m. and then another one at 11.
No one cares.
The upper level winds were from south to north.
Yeah, we don't care about Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy. These were launched from Cape Drugs is where they were launched from. Stop pretending like, well, I don't, it could be anything.
Possible that it is a Air Force weather balloon that wouldn't have a NOAA marking on it. But the Raywinsons are the instrument packages that dangle, and they record pressure, winds, and moisture as they ascend.
Right, and when you have this delicate, precise scientific equipment, what you usually like to do is duct tape it into an igloo cooler? No!
Ones that I looked at today went as high as 10 miles in the sky.
We don't care how high it
before
went,
they
nerd.
Ruptured. And so when they rupture, they fall down. It could have been that as they were falling, the easterly winds then blew them back.
Just say drugs.
Close to our
Somebody
area.
Say drugs,
so
please.
That's the plausible option. Maybe a university was doing something like that.
Drugs.
But for China, no, not the right wind direction.
No. You didn't say UFO either.
I did not.
Yeah, shut up. Shut up, you nerds. It could be scientists. It could be NOAA. It could be the Air Force. They speculated it might be China. They even threw in the possibility that it was a UFO. Not a brick of cocaine. Not drugs. That why does that drive me so insane? I bet you one of those four people on the news are on cocaine right now. They did the morning show, and what is it, like four, almost five in the afternoon? They're doing it right now, probably. One of those people pretending like, ah, jeepers, we may never get to the bottom of this mystery on why someone would strap up an igloo cooler, duct tape it, and throw it on the bottom of a balloon to float it into Florida.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Follow me on Twitter at FloridaStoriesJ. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
I worked in South Florida in the 80s. I spent a lot of time down there. And then I lived in Fort Lauderdale for 1 year in the late 90s. I got to know it sort of okay. And you could feel in the 80s in South Florida, in Miami, you could feel the energy and the evil and the cocaine everywhere you went. You could feel it. Hard to explain, but you could. And it was so profound. It was such a profound part of the economy in South Florida in the 80s, cocaine, that the manager of the radio station that I was working with, Doug Donahoe at Waxy FM, an RKO radio station, he said, we're going to have a really bad quarter this quarter and next quarter. We're going to have a bad quarter. I'm like, the economy's booming. You're in Florida, there's sunshine, the women are gorgeous. Why are you going to have a bad quarter? Because there was a major federal cocaine bust. And a major federal cocaine bust screwed up the bars, the restaurants, the auto dealerships, the luxury auto dealerships, the auto repair places, and travel, on and on and on. It had a profound impact on the economy to the point where it hurt the commercials running on the radio stations in South Florida. That's how much a part of the economy cocaine was in South Florida. Every company has offsites. Every big company has offsites where you take managers of a certain level or a certain group of people to a resort situation, a resort location, and they get a little distraction, a little rest and relaxation. And NBC was no different. Before RKO, when I worked for NBC, when I wore a suit, wingtip shoes, white shirt, rep tie, I was very official. I looked official. I spoke official. I had business cards, color business cards. I said to my assistant, I said, we need to have an offsite. I need to bring together the program directors, sales managers, general managers, bring them all to one place, have a nice meeting, 2 or 3 day meeting. Let's get away. Let's have a positive meeting. And I'll bring my boss, who is the president of broadcasting, a man named Irwin Siegelstein. Irwin Siegelstein, who was, to my mind, incredibly unpleasant. But I needed to bring him because he was my boss. And he was a big deal. He had been president of CBS Records. He had been in charge of much programming on the CBS television network. It was a big deal. And therefore, he was used to the finer things, Ritz-Carlton's, Four Seasons hotels. He was used to those hotels. I would like to think I was too, but to him it was even more important because he was older. And I said to my assistant, let's book this. Let's find a place in South Florida where we can have the offsite. It's February. Let's go to South Florida. In my stupidity, I did not do what I should have done, which is say, oh, let's call the NBC conference planning department and let them pick a resort and arrange for everything, because that's their job. No, instead, I decided that I was going to pick the resort with my secretary, a nice lady from Queens, but not a conference planner. And we'll do it together. We'll book it. And after a few days, she came to me about the hotel I picked. She said, I have nothing to do with this.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Shapiro.
I was looking up the names of the eight. I'm so angry that we're even in this situation at this point in time.
Sterling.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
He had a lot of meat in his pants. The people of Walmart, later, Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Kids in public that are obnoxious, loud, running around. It's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault.
It only takes a little bit of effort, people.
We'll talk about it coming up on Sterling at Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for you on Sterling at Night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share a few stories of some famous NYPD cheapskates. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Dancer's unique side hustle gets her jailed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling every night. The car bar is alive. Neon lights flicker. The patrons talking jive. Trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about a couple of notorious NYPD cheapskates. Now, everybody knows a cheapskate. That lovable pain in the butt never has any money when it's time to pay for something. And NYPD precincts have more than a few. I've stated earlier on this show that I knew a guy that would go around and collect $5 from the rookie cops and then make submarine sandwiches out of his scooter and then go back out on patrol and hand them out these rookie cops that thought he purchased them from a deli. But one of the cheapest guys I knew was a supervisor I worked for. I worked on day shift with him, and every morning he would come up to me and go, "Hey, Vic, are you hungry?" And I go, "Yeah, I could get something to eat." He goes, "Come on, let's go get breakfast." So we would wind up going to a diner or a deli, and I'd get a buttered roll and a coffee. And he would come up to me while I'm waiting online and go, "Oh, I got this." He would take the food out of my hand. He goes, "You get lunch." Now, as a rookie cop, I didn't know any better. I go, okay, so he'd pay for a coffee and a buttered roll, which back then was probably $2, right? Then later in the day, around noon, he'd go, "Hey, you hungry?" It's like, "Yeah, well, let's go to a deli." And then I'd wind up paying for his $7 sandwich and $3 soda. So after a while, I said, "You know what? I'm not driving this guy anymore." And one time he said to me, he goes, "Hey, I noticed you're not driving me anymore." I says, "I don't have the money." Another supervisor I worked for was an old-time lieutenant who had an act that an accomplished confidence man would be proud of. So we would go out to the bar and say 5-6 guys. Every now and then he'd say, "Yeah, I'll come out with you guys." So he would come out. Each guy would buy a round. And when it was his turn, by the time he turned around, he was already out the door. He said, "Oh, my wife just called. I got to get out of here." So after a while, we caught on to his act and we stopped asking him to come out. So one night he shows up at the bar and same thing. Goes around the bar. Everybody's buying a drink. When it's his turn, he goes, guys, I got this one. I almost fell on the floor. I couldn't believe it. This guy never went into his pocket for anything. And here he goes. He reaches into his pocket. And this is his little dive bar in the Bronx that didn't do much business. He plops a $100 bill on the bar. Bartender looks at the $100 bill like he had never seen one before. And he goes, boss, I can't break it. So he turns around. And it was like on a Wednesday. So no one gotten paid yet. So the lieutenant goes to the bar. He goes, guys, can anybody break 100? No one had 100 to break. He goes, I'll get you guys next time. And he left, and we had to chip in to buy ourselves a round. So needless to say, there's more than enough cheap asses in the New York City Police Department. For more insight into the New York City Police Department, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Laughing in the Line of Duty.
So my very good assistant, when I said, all right, let's go to this hotel in South Florida, let's bring the program directors, the general managers, the sales weasels, let's bring them all to this, have an offsite in South Florida, Biscayne Bay, Miami. Fantastic. February. Can't lose. Looks like a nice hotel. Couple days into this, she's talking to the hotel. She comes into my office. She says, I can't have anything to do with this. This is not anything I can control, and hands me it in writing. She wrote me a letter that says she has nothing to do with this. I'm like, well, what can be the big deal? You know, my dad owned a resort. I knew how to talk to resort people. I get on the phone and I start talking to the conference coordinator at this hotel. The hotel mutiny on Biscayne Bay, very important to note, they have completely new owners since this happened in the Jurassic period. This was a previous owner. I booked the conference room. I said to them, I'm going to need a projector. And the conference room lady seemed puzzled about needing a projector. She didn't really know what I meant. But all right, maybe she's new. And everybody got a different room. We booked individual rooms. I don't believe in that crap that some companies do where you're supposed to share a room with another executive. Are you out of your mind? And it's February in Miami. How can we lose? And I'm taking my boss, who's the president of broadcasting for the National Broadcasting Company. He's in charge of all of radio and all of the television stations that are owned by NBC, not the affiliates, the ones they actually own, which means the ones in big cities. Fine. All right. Now we arrive. And remember, my secretary didn't want anything to do with this. And this is the height. This is the height of the cocaine times in South Florida. We check in and I go to my room. My room is named. It's the Panache room. Everywhere in the room is covered with panaches. It's hard to explain. With an interesting design, floor, ceiling. Above the bed is a mirror. There's a mirror above the bed. And then over there in the far side from the bed, built into the wall, seems to be a sacrificial altar of some type with a baby spotlight and a rheostat. I learned that everybody had a different themed room. There was the New York penthouse themed room. Everybody had a different themed room. None of them tasteful. None of them was Nantucket. None of them was Martha's Vineyard. None of them was South Seas Island Plantation. No. This was Detroit, Harlem, penthouse, panache, ice cream. They were all decorated in these insane, out of control, but not fun, attempting to be serious designs. Every one of them, but they were all equipped with the sacrificial altar over there and the mirror above the bed. Everybody had a mirror above their bed. And I'm like, you know, I said to the woman, I said, these are executives. This is an executive meeting. We're not here to party down. And that was news. She had never had people who were there to be serious, because this was not an exactly serious hotel, the Hotel Mutiny on Biscayne Bay. Again, in the 80s, not today. Today it's a tasteful, beautiful resort, but it wasn't then. I'm like, oh my God, where is Irwin Siegelstein, my boss? Which room is his? For some reason, he knew I was in trouble. And he didn't get mad about this. He just thought it was almost funny, but he wasn't thrilled. He was like, yeah, Walter, maybe I'll go home a day early. That was compounded when we looked out into the courtyard in February in Miami, and the pool was empty. There was no water in that pool, and the beach chairs around the pool were rusted out. The supports were rusted. There were no pads on it. There was no towel boy. There was an abandoned pool in the middle of this hotel's courtyard. And I'm there with vice presidents, executive vice presidents from NBC, and the echo of my assistant in my head going, I won't have anything to do with this. Rambling in my bed, I won't have anything to do with this. It gets worse. Now we go to dinner. And, oh, but first we went to lunch. Now we go to the lunch, and I'd never seen a restaurant like this. I'd never seen a restaurant like this. Are you ready? Have you ever seen anything like this? There have to be 40 tables lined up in a row, perfect straight line row, not mingled the way most restaurants are. There's one side of the room and the other side of the room. Before cell phones, on every table is a telephone. And they're all tables for two. 40 tables, one person at each table, and their own phone. Like, what the hell is this? Well, they were all dealers. They were all big shot dealers. This is where they came to eat and do business and not swim in a pool. It wasn't going well. That night, I'm with the vice president of research, Kathy Lenard, a very official woman, and my boss, Irwin Siegelstein. And now we're sitting at a table in this lounge area. After dinner, we're sitting in a lounge area. Everything's almost pleasant. And all of a sudden, we're sitting there about 20, 25 minutes. Suits, ties, official women executives, NBC, brass, brass, brass. At the Hotel Mutiny on Biscayne Bay in South Florida in the 80s. In the 80s. Sitting there. And suddenly, this lounge gets dark, pitch black, all the lights go out. I'm looking around like, how am I going to finish explaining this to my boss? What's going on? And then out of the speakers, and right next to us, right next to our table, right next to Kathy Lenard, the vice president of research for NBC, is a man and a woman naked, dancing to this song. I'm triggered every time I hear this song. Right next to us, dancing naked. I see my career flashing before my much too young eyes. This is Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
You have nice people who invite you for Thanksgiving dinner a month in advance, and then you spring on them the morning that you're coming. We have to bring the dog. It's wonderful with babies. It's wonderful. It doesn't even bark. Do you understand? That's real gall. That's real gall. I'm saying this to the tens of millions of people who will watch this program in repeats, originals, whenever. When I'm long gone, if you're invited to someone's home for an event, and especially if it's a stranger, don't bring or ask to bring your dog.
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you stories of our eight kids living in an old house
Today, we're going to talk about other people's kids.
The ones that run around, make a bunch of noise, scream and yell in like a building or someplace where that is clearly inappropriate.
A restaurant, a library, any kind of situation where there are other people and it's not, you know, a barnyard.
I don't understand how the other parents allow that to happen and act like nothing is going on. How can they watch their kids scream and yell and bang against the wall and tackle each other? Our kids don't do that mess.
It's only because they're not actually watching their kids, honey. People put themselves in these situations where they walk into a building and they allow this to happen, or essentially encourage it to happen, because they ignore their children. They get talking to the other adults, doing whatever it is that they're doing, and it's, oh, well, they're just kids. Kids who can understand, if they're taught from a very young age, what is appropriate and what is not.
As our kids were growing up, we used to use misbehaving kids as examples of what not to do.
And our kids actually use misbehaving kids as examples for other children.
If we were in a restaurant and there was some kid screaming, yelling, or throwing food around or whatever, we would say, see that kid over there? That's what you're not supposed to do.
Right.
And we would tell them that.
But it really started before that. It started before you walked into a building. We would get somewhere and I would say, okay, we're here. And in this building, how are we going to behave? How do you think we should behave?
The pre-speech.
And they're smart enough to know that if you're saying that, they're not going to answer, oh, like a bunch of hoodlums. They're going to say, we should probably be good, mommy. We should be on our best behavior, quiet and nice, good and kind. These are things that very small children would repeat to you.
So what happened today? We were at a place and a bunch of kids were going crazy.
I had to walk out into the lobby.
And people said, well, something about our kids.
I said I had to walk out here when they asked because those kids are being so obnoxious. And then they said, well, certainly not your kids. Your kids don't behave like that. Right.
Yeah. And it's That's a bonus. That's a parental bonus right there when someone notices.
But it's not because we didn't. We just got lucky. It's not because we just got lucky. It's because when I had a baby in my arms in the opera house, I'm standing there going, we're in the opera house. We have to whisper. This is how we talk. Right. Quiet voices. And it's not hard. They get it. They understand. And if your kids are somewhere and they are acting out and you're upset about it, it's because you taught them it was okay by ignoring them and letting it happen. It's on you, parents.
Excuse me. Can I have the soapbox now?
Baby, I don't think you can climb up that high.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, I'm on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan Sterling and Becky, Sterling at Night.
Sterling every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
I am honored to bring to you a live meteorologist, Dr. Dave Iser.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
He had a lot of meat in his pants. The people of Walmart, later, Sterling at Night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Kids in public that are obnoxious, loud, running around. It's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault.
It only takes a little bit of effort, people.
We'll talk about it coming up on Sterling at Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for you on Sterling at Night.
Dancer's unique side hustle gets her jailed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling at Night. Lost in space. Mission control.
Dave Scott, a metaphysicist, ufologist, a Bigfootologist, and a proud Canadian. Dave Scott, welcome to the network radio show that everybody in North America should be listening to, Sterling, every damn night. Hello, Dave.
Mr. Walt, it is always a pleasure to share airtime with someone of your resume and aptitude. So thank you again for letting me bring the tinfoil to your Sunday evening, early Monday morning crowd.
An honor.
Always.
What do you have always to report, Dave? What do you have to report?
Well, you know, we heard a Representative Ana Paulina Luna last week talk about the fact that there was going to be new congressional hearings coming up on UFOs and these UAPs. And the interesting part about this was we thought that these hearings were going to be held near the end of July. And now, obviously, they're not going to be since we're near the end of the month. And, of course, they're not going to be in August because, you know, pretty much Washington, D.C. shuts down for the month of August. But we're hearing that they're going to be back in October. And we now know who is going to be leading the charge for these new UFO hearings. Who? It is Republican from South Carolina, Nancy Mace.
And we love her. Oh, we love her. Yes.
Yes. And she is a big, big fan of trying to figure out what is going on in the UFO story. And Walt, I know you love audio and audio clips, so I'm actually going to play something from where she was interviewing whistleblower David Grush back in 2023, right here.
Fabulous.
You stated that the government is in possession of potentially non-human spacecraft. Based on your experience and extensive conversations with experts, do you believe our government has made contact with intelligent extraterrestrials?
Something I can't discuss in public setting.
Okay, I can't ask when you think this occurred. If you believe we have craft, I stated earlier, do you have the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft?
As I've stated publicly already in my News Nation interview, biologics came to some of these recoveries. Yeah.
Were they, I guess, human or non-human biologics?
Non-human, and that was the assessment of people with direct knowledge on the program I talked to that are currently still on the program.
And was this documented evidence, video, photos, eyewitness? Like, how would that be determined?
The specific documentation I would have to talk to you next about.
So there is Nancy Mace right there showing her interest in this subject. And the one thing that I got to say about this, Walt, if we look at this new crew of congresspeople who want to continue this UFO conversation, there's something interesting about it. They are all under the age of 50. All of the old timers that have been there before and have been paid off and bought off over the years, like Representative Mike Turner out of Ohio, where his constituency is Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which holds a lot of secrets. Those are the people who are wanting to shoot down this UFO story. But it's this new, younger group of congresspeople, it's senators, like Senator Gillibrand, or like Ana Paulina Luna, or Matt Gaetz, or even AOC and Nancy Mace, for that matter, including Tim Burchett. They seem to be on fire and not letting go of this UFO information, trying to get the truth of it.
Do you think AOC will lead this charge, or Nancy Mace?
Nancy Mace, for sure, will be leading the charge, probably backed up by Ana Paulina Luna and Tim Burchett.
Would you like to use my 5 minutes to draft your resignation letter, yes or no?
We love Nancy Mace.
Would you like to use my 5 minutes to draft your resignation letter, yes or no?
She's amazing. She's the one who could extract alien information from us.
You say that the government is...
Absolutely. And that's what we need to focus on. So I think because this younger crowd of congresspeople are really pushing the subject, I really do think it's opening up to more talks. They're not letting it go. They're holding the secret programs to task from the CIA, from the NRO, from the NSA, and the military. I think this is something that is positive, and I think with Lou Elizondo's book coming out in less than a month, probably 3.5 weeks, there is going to be a lot of discussion regarding UFOs and where this is going in the near future.
Did you see this nonsense at the Paris Olympics where this announcer, said something that was perceived to be derogatory about the Australian women's swimming team? This is what he said.
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
He got bounced for that. All he did was say the truth, which is that the reason we're waiting for the Australian women's team to come out is that you know how women are. They need time to put on their makeup. That got him banned. At the same time, Dave Scott, at the same time, the Dutch, the damn Dutch, for their volleyball team, they had a volleyball player who was a convicted, imprisoned child rapist.
Oh, my.
He was no problem. The guy making a joke about women in makeup, obviously a big problem.
Well, it is the Olympics, and being a former sports journalist, I will say, you know, I was in Vancouver right before the Olympics were held. I had left the terrestrial radio at that point, but I saw a lot of the politics that were going on with it, and so it really doesn't surprise me anything that happens at the Olympics anymore.
Dave Scott, how do Midnight Misfits get a hold of you?
SpacedOutRadio.com, or they could hit follow and subscribe on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio, Walt.
Spaced Out Radio with the legendary Dave Scott. Thank you for being on Sterling every damn night. It is 15 minutes past the hour. I'm Walter M. Sterling. What? He's live on a Sunday night? Yes, I'm live. I have a phone. You ready? Let's talk. 888-688-WALT. Am I right or wrong? 888-688-WALT. The pedophile, convicted pedophile on the Dutch volleyball team should not be allowed to play in the Olympics. Meanwhile, old Bob Ballard says something stupid.
Well, the women just finishing up. You know what women are like, hanging around, doing their makeup.
And he gets bounced. Makes no sense. 888-688-9258. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok videos.
Never put these six foods in the fridge, otherwise you wouldn't even know how you died. 1. Ginger.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
This is out of Florida. They found a box in a weather balloon, and the confounding part is they pretend to not know what's in it. All right, so here.
The weather balloon was first spotted over the ocean, far from the shoreline.
It didn't take very long before it actually came ashore, and it was attached to something small that looked like a styrofoam cooler.
The witness also told News for Jax that the balloon and its attachment caught the attention of a group of surfers who followed the balloon to this sand dune.
The surfers all gathered around and was going to open it, and this guy came kind of running down the beach and was like, get away, get away.
The man the witness was describing is believed to be the person who called 911 to report a suspicious box attached to a weather balloon that had just landed on the beach. Based on this picture of the box, it does not appear to have any label identifying it as a meteorology instrument or device used to study weather.
It had like a little orangey-yellow flag on it, and then it was strapped. I think it was like a little black strap that looked like it was around, like I said, a styrofoam cooler.
So far, no one has come forward and said they owned the balloon, and it's still unclear as to where the balloon was launched from.
Now, are you thinking what I'm sure you're thinking what I'm thinking. We know what was in there. It's Florida. What, people trying to sneak stuff into Florida, what is it usually? It's probably drugs, isn't it? Ollie G, do you have any guesses on what could be in the box?
We all know that it's called the bionic, the bomb, the puff, the blow, the black, the herb, the sensi, the chronic, the sweet Mary Jane, ganja, spliff, reefer, the bad, the Buddha, the homegrown, the ill, the Maui Maui, the method, pot, lethal, turbo, tie, shake, skunk, stress, wacky, weed, blaze, the boot, dime, Bag, Scooby-Doo, Bob, Bogey, Backyard Boogie. But what is the other terms for it?
Exactly. Look, do you not want to say drugs on TV, news anchor? You're in Florida, and you do the news in Florida. Half of your show is drug-related every day. Well, you can't even throw that in the speculation. I don't know. It could be. It could be a transmitter. Could be a weather sensors. It could be drugs. Like, no one's tried to sneak cocaine into Florida before. Like, we haven't seen miniseries about the cocaine cowboys and narcos and all these other shows, Scarface, about them sneaking. You don't think someone's trying to sneak something into Florida from the ocean? I'm talking to you, person listening. What do you automatically assume it is? Drugs, right? Drugs. All right. So, all right, Parker, you're blowing it out of proportion. They just did like a little 2-minute news report. They can't squeeze in all the speculation. Oh, no. Oh, no. After I already had this thought, they go away from the package, and then they have like a little discussion at the tables with like the meteorologist guy, and jeepers, guys, what could it be? So they talk for another, what is this, minute and 20 seconds? Nobody brings up drugs. And this is in Florida. This isn't like the local convent. This is Florida. They're probably stepping over drugs every time they go to the vending machine.
Wow. Well, Mark's here now. Mark, you know about weather balloons.
Yeah.
Could this have been, I don't know, something different? Or where did it come from?
Drugs. It's identical to a weather balloon. The mystery is that there's no weather NOAA markings on there. Usually the weather balloons are about 5 feet in diameter, similar to that, 75 long string.
No one cares about the balloon, dude. It's the box. What's in the box? And it really was just like this crappy igloo cooler that looked like someone duct taped it up. And they're like, there's a wire with an orange flag. Yeah, it's like one of those little things that they put when they're marking the gas lines in your yard. And probably so if it lands in the ocean or lands in tall grass, it'll be more easily seen by whoever's job it is to come pick up their drugs.
There were two weather balloons launched today down at Cape Kennedy, in Cape Canaveral, and they were launched at 6 a.m. and then another one at 11.
No one cares.
The upper level winds were from south to north.
Yeah, we don't care about Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy. These were launched from Cape Drugs is where they were launched from. Stop pretending like, well, I don't, it could be anything.
Possible that it is a Air Force weather balloon that wouldn't have a NOAA marking on it, but the Raywinsons are the instrument packages that dangle, and they record pressure, winds, and moisture as they ascend.
Right, and when you have this delicate, precise scientific equipment, what you usually like to do is duct tape it into an igloo cooler? No!
Ones that I looked at today went as high as 10 miles in the sky
ruptured.
And so when they rupture, they fall down. Okay. It could have been that as they were falling, the easterly wind then blew them back.
Just say drugs.
Close to our
Somebody
area.
Say drugs,
so
please.
That's the plausible option. Maybe a university was doing something like that.
Drugs.
But for China, no, not the right wind direction.
No.
No. You didn't say UFO either.
I did not.
Yeah, shut up. Yeah. Shut up, you nerds. It could be scientists. It could be the NOAA. It could be the Air Force. They speculated it might be China. They even threw in the possibility that it was a UFO. Not a brick of cocaine. Not drugs. Why does that drive me so insane? I bet you one of those four people on the news are on cocaine right now. They did the morning show, and what is it, like four, almost five in the afternoon? They're doing it right now, probably. One of those people pretending like, ah, jeepers, we may never get to the bottom of this mystery on why someone would strap up an igloo cooler, duct tape it, and throw it on the bottom of a balloon to float it into Florida.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Follow me on Twitter at Florida Stories J. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Would you like to use my 5 minutes to draft your resignation letter? Yes or no?
Hey, girl, what you doing? Hey, girl, where you going? Who's that girl? Who's that girl? It's just...
Don't shy away from a topic that is difficult to talk about, because most people, when they talk about sex for the elderly, they think about their parents or grandparents, and that might not be conducive to a good discussion.
One of the best programmers in radio who ever lived, Daryl Parks. I said to Daryl, you know, I'm going on vacation the week of August 10th. Why don't you do one of the days? Because he was on a real station. He was on WLW, and he programmed WLW. And he's too smart for that now, thank God. And he's happily retired. But I said, why don't you do my show? You're a great talk show host. I'm driving to Cincinnati from Buffalo that day, I think. Yeah. And then I said to Victoria Keelan, who I adore, who's a great host, and I put her on a bunch of stations, terrific broadcaster. Oh, you know, my landlord just told me that we're moving that day. We're moving that day. So she can't do it because she's moving that day. And then I said to James Copeland, freaking James Copeland, who owes me his entire career, who's the morning man in Coffeyville, Kansas. I said, you want to do my show one night that week? Oh, no, that's State Fair week. Yeah, I got to do the State Fair that week. That's his whole thing. Three people have turned down the opportunity to do this show that I would have killed for if I was in their position. And the lamest excuses, it's right up there with washing. I got to wash my hair that night. All right, there's Mark Simone. We adore Mark. Great guy. Thank you for listening to Sterling every damn night. A persistent fan and yet a broadcaster of note. Should be in the Radio Hall of Fame. Who else should be there? You and I are introverts and loners. And you know how I know I'm a loner? I don't want to run into anyone. When I go out, I do not want to run into anyone. One of the great things about most of the places I've lived is I will not run into anyone. And I prefer if most people don't say anything to me today, nothing. I'm not in the mood for small talk. Wherever I walk to, I hope it's not crowded there. Let me make sure a spot exists so that I know how to get out. And when I wear earphones outside, I'm not usually playing anything. I just don't want to be bothered. And the greatest gift you can give me is to say, hey, listen, we're going to cancel our plans because you and I are misfits. We are midnight misfits. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by Mark Simone.
I'm sure they love their country, but they don't like their country. They don't like Friday night football. They don't like hot dogs. They don't like the 4th of July. It's the worst day of the year for them.
Surgically enhanced stripper Jasmine Clifford, 34 years old, is going to be doing some time in the clink, and here's why. She was selling at the strip club. Yeah, no, not herself. No, Jasmine was selling fake COVID vaccine cards. Yep, she'd been arrested a while back, finally got to court. She made a guilty plea. Yeah, and then reported for sentencing, showing up with her two young children to try to guilt the judge, Marisol Martinez Alonso. Here's what this woman was doing. She was selling vaccine cards, $200 a crack, and for an extra $250, she was arranging that someone would file with the state that the person had been immunized for COVID. Now, at a strip club, there's just no way COVID could be spread around, right? Yes. Jasmine Clifford, by the way, you'll want to look her up online. She certainly has been enhanced by the surgery. And the greedy gal is going to be spending time alone in jail with her lady friends. From the champagne room, get your COVID-19 vaccination card. It's Strippers on the Loose. I'm Velo Hool. Sterling at night.
I have an email. It's Walter M. Sterling, Sterling, Walter M. Sterling at gmail.com. Walter M. Sterling at gmail.com. A website that's spectacular. Charlie Van Zandt counts how many people visit it every week. Walter Sterling Show. Walter Sterling Show. Now, if you would like the recipe that the JB Bakery people put together with the double fudge and the double chocolate, the insane thing that they suggested, I'll send it to you. I have it. I'll email it to you free, no problem. Love to get you as part of our show. Just send a request to that email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I'll send it right out. And then let me know how it goes. Let me know how much you like the recipe. Every week we have a new recipe from JB Bakery, and I am thrilled that you like this. We have so many pieces of this show that other shows don't have, or can't have, because they don't have my brain. I got a blessing today, such a gift that the radio provides. When I was 6, 7, and 8, I had a friend around the corner, lived in a typical suburban neighborhood, nice schools, nice people, nice homes, right in the middle, in North Jersey, in Maplewood. That's where I lived. I lived in Maplewood. I grew up in Maplewood. I was born in Newark, grew up in Maplewood. And right around the corner was a nice kid named Peter. And Peter and I were friends. I think he had a sister. I know he took piano lessons. And he had a very caring, professional, discreet mother. A little hard to explain, but unlike my mother, his mother was always well-dressed, well-coiffed. The house was immaculate. But Peter had a challenge. He was 5, 6, 7. He was like you and me. Nice, fun kid, good to play with. But he was going progressively blind, and he knew it. It was not a secret. He was going blind. This was the only child that I ever played with or knew at the age of 5, 6, 7 who was in any way special, in any way challenged compared to my other friends. This was before individual educational plans. This was before IEPs. This was before special ed teachers and shadow teachers in every classroom, subsidized by every state. ADHD, here, take 20 pills and calm down. There was none of that. It was a terrific school system. I'd give anything to be able to have my kids in a school system like that rather than the clown show that they've been in. But Peter was a nice kid, and when you're 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, you really don't have, I didn't have language, an emotional superstructure for dealing something so extraordinary that I had a friend who was progressively losing his sight, and his mother was progressively watching him, guarding him, hovering over him, protecting him in as non-obtrusive a way as possible. But there was a point at which Peter could no longer go to the same school that I was going to, could no longer go to the public school down the block. I remember that at a point, his mother said, Peter's going to have to go to a different school soon. And we're going to have to move closer to that school. And there was a day when Peter could no longer see. And I didn't really know what to do. I went to his house. Sometimes his mother would let me play. Sometimes she wouldn't. It depended on her mood and the kid's mood. But I saw in the screen door, from the screen door of the front of this house, this nice suburban house, I could see the living room, 4:30 in the afternoon, that haze was starting. I could see Peter sitting on the piano bench, staring out the window. And he just sat there, like a fawn, like a gentle child. And he didn't really know what was going to happen next. I don't remember if his mother let me in to say goodbye or to talk to him, but I will never forget the image of him sitting there coping, accepting, processing the fact that he was now blind. And I didn't know how to deal with him being blind either, but I knew he was leaving that day or the next day. Today, I get an email from Peter's wife. I hadn't heard from him since I was 5 or 6. I get an email today from his wife asking if I remembered him. And he composed this letter. She wrote it. And in it he says, "You talk a lot about being a misfit, and I certainly understand that. And that is the magic of radio. That is radio. I'm sharing my life with you. I share my stories with you. Here's Peter, blind, remembers me from when he was 5 or 6. Hears me on the radio. Hears me talking, you and I, about being misfits. He's a misfit. Puts it in the note. Gives me his phone number. I will call him tomorrow, and I'll find out about where did those kids go. Because today, kids who are challenged, they're mainstreamed in the schools, they have all kinds of helpers. But then there were no kids that were challenged in the public schools. They disappeared. The kids with behavioral problems, ADHD, learning issues, blindness, handicaps, there were no wheelchairs. Those kids disappeared. Where did those kids go? I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Jimmy O. Yang.
I'm not Korean, I'm Chinese. And he looked back to his friends, he's like, "Oh, pinche chinito, huh?" And I'm like, "Sir, you do know that I can understand what that means, okay? I have Mexican friends back home just like you." He was like, "No, I'm not Mexican, I'm El Salvador." And I'm like, "Oh, great, now I'm the racist."
Sterling Every Night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, The Edge of the Sphere. Stephen didn't see her right away as he entered the clearing. Confused, he looked around, and his heart sank at the thought of not being with her. His concerns were dismissed as he heard a splash coming from the tall rock formation. Leora emerged from behind the waterfall. She waded toward him, the water lapping up against her waist. Her dampened ringlets lay plastered on her porcelain skin. Other than the errant curl and the metallic bangles around her wrists, there was nothing to obstruct his view of her nude body. She flashed him an enticing smile before diving beneath the surface of the water. Climbing on top of the stone where they usually sat, he watched as she reappeared and floated in the crystalline pool. He didn't need verbal instructions to know what he was expected to do. Bending down, he unlaced his boots and kicked them off. His socks followed before he straightened, and he glanced at his companion. She was treading water in the center of the pond, her gaze never leaving him. In front of anyone else, he would have been self-conscious. He felt safe with her. He unbuttoned his shirt and shrugged it off his shoulders, letting it flutter to the grass. The clothing on the lower half of his body soon joined it, and he stood before her, exposed in the outside air. He sat on the edge of the rock and let his toes dangle in the water before easing his way in. The temperature was warmer than he expected, and he ducked his head underwater, pushing the loose strands of hair away from his eyes. When he resurfaced, he scrabbled around for solid ground with his feet while trying to stay afloat. His struggle did not go unnoticed, and she paddled back to the shallower end near the waterfall. He followed close behind, internalizing a sigh of relief when he felt the slick rock below him. She stood up and faced him, and he let his stare linger upon her once more, resolved to memorize every part of her while he still had time. Their inevitable separation forced its way to the foreground of his mind, and he wasn't going to be content with simply looking. He brushed away a lock of hair stuck to her cheek and tucked it behind her ear. With a hand on either side of her face, he kissed her, basking in the moment he had been waiting for since he last awoke. She flung her arms around his waist and pulled him closer to her. The cool mist rising from the glass-like surface encircled them, yet her skin was warm to the touch as she pressed up against him. Stephen slid a hand down to the small of her back to hold her as he kissed a trail to her collarbone and beyond. She writhed against him, and he stopped, remembering both the joy and heartbreak of their previous encounter, and terrified the fragile world of dreams they inhabited would chatter once more. Without speaking, he glanced up at her to raise his concerns and ask permission to continue. Leora stroked his hair and bit her lower lip. She nodded, and there was nothing in that instant he wouldn't risk in exchange for exploring her more intimately. He moved to return his lips to her skin, but thought better of it, and scooped her into his arms instead. Gliding through the pool, they crossed the waterfall into the small recess behind it, where he gently set her down on a stone slab at the water's edge. As soon as she was seated, she drew him in for another kiss. The heat of her mouth was irresistible to him, and he lost himself to the sweetness of her prodding tongue. Thoughts of his previous intentions found their way back to him, prompting him to resume his prior activities. Propping himself up on the rock with his hands, he dragged his lips down her moistened skin. The rise and fall of her chest encouraged him to continue forth. Despite his own desires, he wanted nothing more than to bring her into a state of pure pleasure. With her entrance into his life, she had awakened something inside him, and he wanted to return some of that energizing fire. He kissed his way to her stomach, sliding his hand against her thigh. Caressing her delicate skin, he dipped his head even lower and nudged her legs apart with his cheek. Oh my, I think I need to stop here tonight before we all get into trouble. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, The Edge of the Sphere, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Oh my gosh, was that an exciting show? Did you learn a lot tonight? I hope so. The greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
I love the sweet Walter Sterling Show. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it so.
Join us next week. 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for another Walter Sterling Show.
And my classroom should be as well air conditioned as your favorite bar.
Join us next week at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific.
Next Sunday. All right. Right. Stay bright.
A great way to end your day.
tender.